Hey, Trojan fans, it's time to get into the huddle with the Peristyle Podcast. The Peristyle Podcast is your weekly ticket to USC football and recruiting news. Don't forget, you can download the podcast 24/7 at our website, peristylepodcast.com. And now, here's the host of the Peristyle Podcast, USCFootball.com publisher, Ryan Abraham.
Hello, Trojan fans. Welcome to the Peristyle Podcast on a Tuesday, talking some USC football with our good friend, Dan Weber, beat writer and columnist for USCFootball.com. Lots of football to get to. Of course, big weekend coming up against Washington, but we want to talk about the win over Oregon as well. USC's on a five-game winning streak, which wouldn't have believed if you told me that, you know, a month and a half ago when USC was 1-3. But here we are, and lots to talk about on that. If you have any questions or comments for us, just go to our website, peristylepodcast.com. Our email, our phone number, all of our contact information is up there on peristylepodcast.com. We have our own iTunes page, itunes.com/peristylepodcast. A lot of different ways to get a hold of us, consume the show. If you're on iTunes or any of the podcasting apps like Stitcher or Audio Boom, like us, follow us, leave us some feedback. We love to hear from you. Let people know that you like the Peristyle Podcast. And, Dan, welcome to the show. Wanted to talk about the game. It's, I wouldn't have believed that, you know, 6 weeks ago that you'd say, oh, USC's would win five in a row and have game day up in Seattle for USC versus Washington.
Yeah, they're still kind of in the supporting cast. You know, as far as I'm concerned, it's absolutely ludicrous that they're not ranked at this point. I mean, if you look at, you know, there's 15 teams ranked ahead of them, USC would probably be favored if they played. Washington isn't one of them, so this is a chance for Washington to show off the, you know, the new stadium or the redone stadium, and a chance to show, you know, for Jake Browning, you know, his Heisman Trophy, you know, moment, maybe. This is their, you know, chance to show who they are, what they can do. And, you know, it's great for USC to be part of that. I think it was really interesting. Last night, the Pac-12 Network chose to replay the 2011 USC game at Oregon. By far, Lane Kiffin's best game, you know, his coaching career. I mean, that was, you know, a team that, again, shouldn't have lost two of those games. They lost two, and they finished 10-2, couldn't go to the playoffs, couldn't go to the Pac-12 championship game. But you realize that was a really good football team USC had that night in Seattle, and how many of those guys are in the NFL, and how they went after, you know, the Ducks, who were, I don't know, fourth or so in the country, something like that, and a big night. Phil Knight had brought in all his NBA stars. LeBron, you know, LeBron was on the sidelines and all those people. And USC really took it to them. You know, they sort of hit a Monty Kiffin collapse in the fourth quarter and still held on a missed field goal. But I get the sense that, you know, could this be one of those moments for this USC team? They'd have to grow up. That team, when you watch them, you realize there's some men playing for that USC football team. Red Ellison, you know, Matt Khalil, a healthy Mark Tyler, maybe the best game I've ever seen, you know, Matt Barkley play. So for this USC team to say, okay, we're getting to the place where some of those teams got at the end of the seasons, this is the week they got to step up and show what they can do.
The step up and show what you can do is important. This game, Dan, I think a lot of USC fans have circled on the calendar. They want to know, is this team for real? They look at the competition, the defenses that USC's played. It was, you know, they're some of the worst defenses in the country, in Arizona State, Cal, and Oregon. This Washington team is not. And so I think even they want, you know, the one they've won five in a row, there's still a lot of USC fans that are doubtful, to be nice, about Clay Helton. And they're circling this game as this is the one. This is the one that tells you what kind of team USC is. I don't know if that's fair or not, but that seems to be the way people are leaning right now.
Yeah, it's probably not fair. I mean, let's face it. They outplayed Utah, in Sam Darnold's first game. At Utah, bad weather. without the three fumbles, they beat Utah by a couple of touchdowns easy. And certainly, you know, out-statistic them for whatever that's worth. Then you look at the Colorado game. Colorado, who keeps moving up and moving up, and USC probably should have beaten them by three touchdowns. I'm still mad at Juju and the posters who thought, what a great play for him to hit the dirt, and not make it 28-17 with a minute to go. Yeah, that was a great play. So now everybody can basically say, yeah, USC was lucky to beat Colorado. Colorado was, you know, probably should have won that game, not knowing anything about the fact that USC had a couple hundred yards more than Colorado and should have won going away. And again, turned the ball over, and the score didn't represent that game. But you know, they're actually on a pretty good run. I mean, you know, they were clearly better than Colorado, ranked 15th, and they were probably clearly better, you know, than Utah to start the run. You know, so it hasn't been that bad a run. I mean, you can't substitute your schedule. I mean, you play who you play. For example, you can say, well, Oregon's terrible. But they were averaging 519 yards a game, and they ran their offense on everybody. They certainly ran the ball on everybody they played. And they played, you know, some pretty good teams and, you know, almost beat Nebraska. And USC held them to 288 yards offense and, you know, less than 100 running the ball. I mean, they just didn't let them play. So I know people say, well, we're waiting for Washington, but there has been improvement. I don't think there's any question that this team has incrementally improved through, you know, the October schedule, no matter, you know, what you're going to say about how they got to Washington. You know, listen to what the Washington people are saying about USC, not their fans, obviously. You know, I'd be like paying attention to what a lot of the guys, no, I won't say that. Look at what, you know, Chris Peterson had to say about USC, and I don't think he spends a lot of time blowing smoke, but I think they know that they better play really well the way this USC team is playing.
Dan, we got a lot to get to in the show, a bunch of questions and stuff, and it's also Election Day, so happy Election Day, everybody. Hope you went out and voted. I know Dan and I both just talked about it before the show. We both went out there and voted, and you want to get out there? Dan, if you want to go out and vote, you want to look good. And so our sponsor for this show, Dollar Shave Club, has been great to us. It's a lot of fun talking about Dollar Shave Club and getting to know more about them and using their products. But you want to get out there, Dan. You want to look good when you're voting. And you don't have to choose between price and quality if you want to get a great shave. So DollarShaveClub.com is the answer. DollarShaveClub/USC. If you want to get the USC deal, we'll talk about it in a second. But they have great razors. They'll deliver it right to your door. A third of the price of what you're going to pay in the stores. You don't have to go in there behind lock and key and people looking at you, security guards checking you out because you're trying to buy a razor. You don't want to be hassled by all that kind of stuff. Just go to dollarshaveclub.com/USC and they'll hook you up. So here's your chance. You can see why over 3 million members like me love Dollar Shave Club. Dollar Shave Club. So confident in the quality of all their products. Now you can get your first month of the club for free. Just pay for the shipping. After that, it's just a few bucks a month. There's no long-term commitment, no hidden fees, no reason not to do it. So go get yours, dollarshaveclub.com/USC. That's dollarshaveclub.com/USC. Let me know if you try it out. Send me an email, podcast@uscfootball.com. Let me know how you like it. I've been using it. And like I said before, I'm shaving a lot more often now that I have the Dollar Shave Club. So, yeah, good stuff. I don't know if you were clean shaven, Dan, when you went out and voted today. Hopefully you were.
You know what? I was just thinking about that. The cleaner shaven you are, the easier it makes it to put that I voted sticker on your cheek if you want. You know, if you want to really be proud of the fact that you voted. You don't want to do that if you've got a beard. Get yourself shaved up nicely and put that sticker on.
I got mine on my shirt right now, wearing it proudly. So do you wear yours today or did you just throw it away?
No, I still got it. I may wear it to practice.
Yeah, yeah.
I saved it.
Yeah, I saved it too.
I'll take all the credit when I get to practice.
Well, there'll probably be a lot of political talk, I would guess, at practice today. We'll see. But Of course, USC back on.
They kind of keep it quiet around me. They, no, we've been good this year. It's not. I mean, one year, you know, I still remember some of the guys who'd been on the beat a long time, some columnists, and that we all started talking, and they just assume if you're a newspaper guy, a media person, they just assume you are on the side of wherever all the media people are, which that's pretty well documented, and they found out I wasn't, and I'm really not on that on that side that you know, you assume the media people are on. And it became like a really very quiet moment there, because it just, you know, when you say no, that's not how I think, and it goes into a whole different direction. So it's interesting, though. We're kind of in a minority in the media, if we're on one side of the political spectrum from where most of the media is.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I came up as an engineer. You know, I wasn't in like the media to start, so I kind of joined that later. So I definitely came from a different political view than most of our colleagues out there. So yeah, it's kind of fun. Yeah, but it's good. We like to talk about stuff, and it's cool. I'm sure we'll be talking about a lot today. Everyone checking their phone. Sometimes you're checking your phone, checking the World Series score at practice. Now it's going to be checking the election results.
Well, I will say this. Zach Helfand and Joey Crawford are really political junkies. So those are two new guys on the beat who really pay attention to politics. And it's fun to, you know, talk politics with them, because they know what they're talking about, and that makes it kind of an even matchup. So that's fun.
Well, let's jump into some of these questions, Dan. We'll go with Ron to start. Well, actually, I wrote down Ron, but then he said, this is Ray. So maybe I wrote his name down wrong. But then the question, he says, this is Ray. So sorry, Ray, if you were Ron, but you are now Ray. Yet another Trojan fan in SEC country. Love the podcast. Never miss an episode. Wish you guys could do it daily. Question is for Dan. Given how this team is now performing in almost every phase of the game, with 500-plus yards average, suffocating defense, even special teams, how about that innovative Pittman return? Kudos to Coach Baxter. Isn't it time for the fans calling for Helton to be replaced to give it a rest? He's proven that he can build a staff, that he can convince his guys to buy in and play hard for him even after the rough start. And now USC is blowing out teams in the Coliseum again. I miss this feeling. He wasn't my first or second choice, but he has this team rolling, and that's all that matters, right? Thanks for taking my question. Fight on and beat the Huskies. From Ray.
Yeah, Ray, I don't think there's any question. I mean, obviously he wasn't anyone's first choice in the normal way of choosing things, you know. But he clearly would be on a better place than, you know, the issues that that Lane and Sark brought with him. And the fact that, you know, yeah, were they not prepared in September? Absolutely not. Did they make a lot of mistakes that, you know, you could attribute to the fact that you're a first-year coach? Yeah, I've had this discussion with, you know, Coach O a great deal about, you know, the mistakes he made at Ole Miss in those 3 years, and you try to do everything, and, you know, you really, you know, I think Coach Bear Bryant always said it best. He said, your job is to coach your coaches. They coach the players. You got to understand how to do that. And the transition from someone who's always coached the players to now you got to coach your coaches, that's not easy to do. And so so they were really not prepared well and not, you know, suited well for that first month. But the fact that they didn't, you know, just throw it in and just say, the heck with this, you know, we're out, you know, that they've kind of, you know, rallied around. I mean, I thought the game they went up and played at Utah was, you know, was terrific. They didn't understand how many guys you got to have rotating on defense, and they were a little careless and trying too hard, turning the ball over and some penalties that really hurt them. But, you know, that says an awful lot about a coach, you know, that they're really doing everything they can. Are they doing it perfectly? No. Are they disciplined? No. I mean, you have 13 penalties in each of the last two games. Something's not right. I mean, that's just, you know, and that's coaching. I mean, that's discipline. That's focus. So do they have things they still got to get accomplished? Yeah. should the conversation be about, you know, replacing the head coach at the end of the year? No, not even a little bit. And it won't be when you look at and say, wow, what kind of shape was Oregon in? And then you're looking at the next couple of weeks and you're saying, wow, what kind of shape is UCLA and Notre Dame in? And so USC, by comparison, you know, to those three, you know, rivals, is in a whole different place, even, you know, with a brand new coach who hasn't ever coached before and wouldn't be able to get the job on the open market. And, you know, could you say, yeah, he wouldn't be hired by any other team in the Pac-12? There's no question about that. He would not have been hired at the start of this year by any other program in the Pac-12. That doesn't necessarily mean anything. I mean, people keep making that argument. I don't think that argument means anything. You know, now we're getting a chance. He's doing his job interview now. He's building his resume now. A lot of people would say, gosh, I wish for a job as good as the USC job, that would happen before, you know, you get the job, but it didn't. And, you know, to say that this hasn't been extraordinary circumstances, I mean, USC has to be the first program in major college football history to fire two coaches in mid-season 2 years apart. That's never happened before, anything like that. So anything that follows is probably going to be fairly extraordinary, too. Now we watch it play out, and I think it's playing out pretty well.
You mentioned the penalties, and there's a lot of questions, Dan, we got on penalties. I'll read you two of them. Tarek is quick. He said, is USC that undisciplined, or are the Pac-12 refs that bad? And
correct. I'll answer that one right.
Okay.
Correct.
So both. Okay. All right, Tarek.
Yes,
so,
correct. Yes is the answer.
A little bit of both.
Yeah.
Stephen Poway wrote in, while the Oregon defeat was great to watch, I was frustrated watching USC get flagged so many times for penalties. On one play, I saw Zach Banner get flagged for holding as he was actually trying to chase down the defender from behind as the defender rushed the quarterback, but Banner wasn't even able to catch him, so how could he have held him? Here's my question. Roughly what proportion of USC's penalties do you think were legit penalties that we should be concerned about, and how many were due to poor officiating? It's hard for me to know whether to be angry at the team or that the Pac-12 officiating crew. I think the answer is probably yes again. Yeah. One thing is certain, if we are flagged that many times next week in Seattle, the team will not be celebrating an upset victory on the plane ride home. Steve in Poway.
Yeah, Steve, I think Clay, he had kind of an answer for that, where you've got to, because he won't say anything bad about the officials, even though apparently during the game he was saying some bad things about the officials. But he said, and I thought, you know, coming off the World Series, and we get such great camera work now on the home plate umpires. And he said, basically, you got to understand who's calling the game, how they're calling it, and you've got to adjust. If they're, you know, guys throwing flags from everywhere and three and four flags coming in, you got to keep your hands to yourself. You know, you want to run by somebody, you don't have to reach out and touch them. You got them covered, you know, man, step for step, you know, like Iman Marshall will on a number of occasions. You don't also have to grab their jersey, you know. I mean, and yet some of those penalties, apparently USC is just outraged over the fact that when they, you know, Oregon substituted, USC gets a substitute. And the USC sub was running off the field, and Oregon snaps the ball. And the officials are supposed to allow you to make a sub to match their sub, and they didn't let USC do it. And they probably screwed up on that play. I'm guessing that one got turned into the league. They called an illegal block on the USC punt coverage team. I'm sorry. And how does the punt coverage team on defense, basically, commit an illegal block? I don't think I've ever seen that, you know, a block below the knees. You know, maybe it happened. I don't know, but would you trust the Pac-12 officials to get that right? Of course you wouldn't. You can't. They're the Pac-12. I mean, that's the problem. They keep talking about they're really trying. They're doing much more education during the year. They're doing much more, you know, training, blah, blah, blah. But you go out there to those games and you see the same guys. that have been there forever. And you think, I'm sorry, if you can't officiate all the training in the world, you know, if you're a guy that you know, chokes up when the ball's in the air and you're thinking, ooh, what's this going to look like on film? Or is the home crowd going to scream at me? Or whatever, maybe I better throw a flag. If you can't officiate, all the training in the world isn't going to make you a better official. And that is the situation the Pac-12's in. They got guys that can't officiate. They got guys that can't handle the big moment. I mean, and I say this having spent pretty much time in the SEC and in the Big Ten and pretty close to a number of officials, and just the quality of guys that were doing those games, there's a more of a confidence, more of a, you know, we got this under control. I don't see that in the Pac-12. You get that deer in the headlights look, that guys don't, they know this thing maybe is too much for them. And part of that is maybe the Pac-12 was the first league where everybody threw the ball and everybody ran up tempo and there are more plays and more calls, more judgments, more everything. But they just don't handle it as well as they really should. And, you know, game in, game out, you just come away thinking, well, you know, was that fair or not? It's really hard to know, other than you see things you don't see anywhere else in the Pac-12.
Yeah, some unique stuff going on. Two more I wanted to read for you about officiating. Neil from Manila, we love our international questions. How confident are you guys for USC to learn how to minimize penalties and turnovers in preparation for Washington? Do you think USC has a chance there? And Eric in Duck Country, please give me a reason to believe the Trojans can play penalty-free football on Saturday. The offensive line will decide the outcome of the game. So people concerned, yeah, not just of what has happened in the past, Dan, but what could happen this weekend.
Yeah, and, you know, when you talk to Clay about it, he goes over and says, and he's right, that the penalties came everywhere, on everybody, in every kind of a situation, you know, offense, defense, carelessness, over, you know, exuberance, you know, lack of focus. All, and you talk to the players, and again, it's every kind of reason you could possibly imagine. And how do you go about at that point, you know, saying we're going to, you know, stop this? They haven't been big on officials during the season. I don't know that we've seen any. Once the season started, they really haven't brought any officials to the practices. So, you know, I guess you could do that. I guess you could, you know, have the coaches start throwing flags and have guys, you know, running or, you know, doing up downs or any kind of thing, you know, when they, although we don't see that as much in practice now. You might say, well, shouldn't practice be more like games so that you can see how you're going to perform? And if you're not, you know, and they're not tackling and they're not taking people to the ground, and maybe they shouldn't, probably they shouldn't, but it's then you don't see the kind of, you know, extended arm into the face mask area, or, you know, the hold and the grab, if you're not really blocking the way you're going to be blocking in the game. So the ability, I thought that was always, and it didn't help Pete Carroll's teams, but they did, I thought, get closer to game tempo and practice. That would be my solution, is to try to make practice as competitive and as game, as much game tempo and game speed as you possibly could, and game competitiveness, and just get them so that when they get to games, they don't feel like they got to speed up. They don't feel like they got to do extra things. That was the genius of Pete. His teams believed when they got to the games would be easier because they had to compete so hard at practice. They didn't go long. They didn't hit, you know, an excessive amount. But they competed in a way at practice that it got them ready for games. Again, in some of those years, they were so much better than the rest of the Pac-12 that they got penalties, I think, and Pete figured that out. And they didn't penalize the other team just to keep the games close. I mean, I don't think there's statistically, you know, Pete one year figured out that statistically whoever played USC was going to get penalized about half as much is they got penalized in every other game they played, which made no sense. You know, you're playing USC, you're probably going to do more things to get penalized. So it was pretty obvious the officials were just trying to, you know, make it a better game. But that was, you know, it's kind of disturbing that, you know, you would think that there would be something else going on other than just calling the game the way you saw it. And that's kind of always been the problem with Pac-12 officials, that you think, what else is going on here? And often something is.
Let's go, Dan, to Steve had a question. He said, it's clear to me that Dominic Davis may be fast, but he's not quick or elusive, and he's definitely not a power back. So if Justin Davis and Akacedric Ware are not able to go Saturday against Washington, I believe Ronald Jones will need someone else to back him up. And I wonder if that could be the highly touted freshman, Vave Malapai. I know he was injured early in the season, and the plan clearly been to redshirt him this year. But this game against UW is too important not to pull out all the stops. While James Tolan looks strong in quote-unquote garbage time, would Vavai be ready to go? Your thoughts? Thanks, as always. You guys are the best in the business by far. And he said, P.S., kudos to Porter Gustin for his coming out party against the Ducks.
Well, a lot of good comments there, except for the fact that I don't think they burned Vavai's red shirt for this game. He has looked good in practice. He hasn't, you know, I mean, he's just hit October, and he's done a lot of special team stuff. I don't think this would be the time you'd want to break out a kid first time ever in a football game at Washington. I would just think two things. I would think, one, Ronald will get more carries. That's not a bad thing. You know, if you're the guy that your coach says, boy, I hold my breath every time he gets the ball because he could take it all the way, I'd like him to have more carries. 20, he had 20 last week, and that's nice. What if he had 25? That's five more chances to hold your breath. Maybe he'll go all the way. So I don't think 25 wears him down that much. And if I have to go with a second back to run the ball for USC, I think that second back is a guy by the name of Sam Darnold. And I think some designated runs for Sam might be the way to go. You know, if you're going to try to get to 40 runs on the offense, you know, start with Rojo with 25 and then see where you go from there. But that's kind of the way I'd go. I don't think I would put a freshman who hasn't played yet and has been injured for a good bit of the season and who does have a red shirt and who might be the kind of kid that he really might be able to benefit from a red shirt. I'm not as convinced that red shirts are that beneficial anymore for your top players, but he might be. I think there are some exceptions, and I think Vavai might be one of those. So I'd say probably not.
We had a comment from Otis. He said, no matter how you look at it, that was a great win. I think the main difference in this game is that Sam has struggled to connect on the deep ball, whereas Max Brown hasn't. Beat the Huskies. Make a statement from Otis.
Otis, my man, from Animal House, I guess, wasn't it? So he said Max Brown hasn't struggled to
No,
hit
he
the
was
deep
saying
ball.
Sam. He's having trouble with Sam Darnold struggling with the deep balls, but said Max Brown didn't. We didn't really. I mean, we don't have a whole lot of tape to look at Max Brown throwing deep balls. To be fair,
I mean, he did throw it nice in practice, but I think with Sam, I think there are a couple of things. A couple of his deep balls, he's thrown out of scramble situations. We haven't seen much in the way of just a straight play action where a couple of times, you know, we've had, you know, balls that hit off guys' hands that would have required a really good catch. But I think, you know, when he's just in there throwing it normally, what you didn't see with Max was the fact that you didn't see those plays with Max because Max wasn't probably going to be scrambling and throwing off the back foot and that kind of thing, where Sam, that's just part of his game. and what he can do for, say, 85-90% of his passing opportunities where he can scramble, keep his eyes downfield, throw on the run, and throw with great accuracy, that's not as easy to do if you're trying to throw it 40-45 yards over a defender. And even in those cases, I think he gives the guy a chance, gives the receiver a chance to come back and get the ball, and that's not a bad thing. And except if you don't recognize that there's a safety coming over. And on the last two interceptions, both of those, Sam didn't see the safety coming over. And that was the big mistake more than, you know, the way he threw the ball. But, yeah, he's got to probably recognize the fact that if he's throwing the ball on the run, on the dead run, off his back foot, without really getting planted, without getting a chance to turn his shoulders where, you know, you're trying to throw it 45 yards down the field with just your arm, that's a little bit more difficult play. You know, you're not going to get much chance in practice to do that. But yeah, it gives him something to work on. But I think the recognition of where the safety is more important than his arm in those last couple of interceptions.
We had a question from another international question, that way down south. It said, Ryan, this is John from Northeast Brazil. I'm not quite sure I understand the concern about USC's defense. It seems to me that nobody is stopping anybody. Alabama can score. Ohio State can score. Washington can score. Anyone can score. I don't see what the concern is about USC's, defense. They seem to be able to make adjustments against the teams that want to do a certain type of offense. They seem to adjust well enough. At least they have been the last few games. What are your thoughts?
Well, they certainly have taken away, you know, if you start through this series, I mean, they took away what Arizona State wanted to do. Though they had, you know, to do it with a, who was still the quarterback for them that game. But they took away what Colorado wanted to do and with two quarterbacks, and their backup isn't bad at all. And they certainly took away what Cal wanted to do with a, you know, senior or grad student, a very experienced guy who came in just throwing the ball all over the place. And, you know, they got him off his spots and made him throw a little quick. And then Justin Herbert, the freshman from Oregon, who, again, had thrown for 10 touchdown passes the previous two games, and he looked like a freshman against this, against the USC defense. They got him off his spots and they sacked him three times, and, you know, they just, have been able to kind of rise to the occasion. And while doing that, they held Oregon to, what, like 85 yards rushing, and this is an Oregon team that was leading the Pac-12 in rushing at 248 yards a game, I think. So, I mean, you know, obviously you said nobody can stop anybody. Alabama can stop people, and LSU can stop people. And, you know, Wisconsin looks like, you know, even with our USC guy there, they can stop the people they've been playing. They can't maybe score enough points, you know, to beat them. But, you know, there are a few teams that seem like they're, you know, they've figured out how to stop people, but I think USC is getting to be one of those teams. And a couple of the last few games, you know, you take away the garbage points, you know, without the, you know, starters in, and USC's defense has played really well against teams who, you know, whether they can play defense or not, their offenses have been performing, and they don't perform against USC, in the recent games. So, I'm not as concerned, although, you know, this is the week that, you know, Jake Browning has just been so efficient, and they've gotten people so wide open, and Gaskin is awfully good, you know, running the ball, and that Ross, the wide receiver, is really, really, you know, talented, really dynamic player. So, this will be the test. It'll be very, really interesting to see what Clancy does, what he tries to take away, how he tries to do that, and how this team is able to, you know, to execute that under the pressure of playing, you know, in Husky Stadium.
We got Sergeant Strong U.S. Army Fort Lewis, Washington. Thanks for your service, Sergeant.
That's right. Our Washington man there. Great.
Yeah. We'll be coming up there this weekend. Well, SC won. SC is bowl eligible. And he said, I'm still not sold on Helton yet. Is that bad? I don't know if USC is winning because, Sam Darnold, is that good or if Helton is better as a coach. Help me here out here, boys. Thanks and fight on from Sergeant Strong.
Well, I think the thing that I don't quite understand is why Helton doesn't get credit to some extent for Sam being able to play the way Sam's playing. I mean, a lot of people, if you're the backup, you're not in the picture that much. What they did with Sam to, you know, create a short yardage situation and a red zone situation for him every game, you know, from the beginning of the season, that he wasn't just a typical backup like poor Max was to, you know, to Cody, where he was out of sight, out of mind pretty much. So Sam, when he was, inserted in that Utah game, he was ready to go. And so for that, I think that's good coaching. I think that's really good coaching. I think obviously the way they wanted to, you know, run the offense was more suited to what Sam can do. To the fact that he makes it more difficult to defend the run against USC. He just distributes the ball. You hear the wide receivers talking, and they, you know, for years, USC, if you weren't the designated wide receiver, you could go take a seat on the bench at the end of a pattern. Now they run like crazy and they keep running. And as long as the ball hasn't been, you know, released, they're all running to, you know, get to an open area because they know Sam might get it to him. So that has changed the offense a great deal. And yet that's the offense that they wanted to run. And they've changed the line blocking some. I think that's a good thing. And I think that's coaching and that's, learning by, you know, what you weren't getting right. So I think a coach should get credit for that. I think, Clay had a big part in convincing Clancy that you can't play with 12, 13, or 14 guys on defense in this league anymore. That if you catch these teams when they really get a hot streak on offense, you know, and they're going to run 80, 90 plays if they can, 100 if they can, you better have you got to get more guys ready to play on defense. I think that's something that I think Clay got right. And I think the fact that Clay got them to not, you know, throw in the towel. He got them to say, you know, we can save this season and we can go out there and play hard. And that's a big deal. If you look at some of the other teams and you wonder, you know, are they still playing hard? And looks like USC is. I mean, they'll make the mistakes. They'll make the penalties, all the kinds of things that maybe, you know, lack of discipline or lack of focus. But it isn't for lack of effort. It isn't for lack of trying. Even though they're not hitting a great deal in practice, that doesn't carry over to the games. They're still going out and hitting people in those games. I mean, you doubt that. Watch Jack Jones on special teams just once and see what happens. I mean, so they will hit you, and that's a good sign. And I know, you know, people were all over Clay, and he had gotten a bad start with the Holiday Bowl and not taking a week of practice and getting run over by a Wisconsin team that practiced in pads and, you know, took every day and came out and slugged it out, and USC wasn't ready for that. And that was a big mistake. And Clay's tendency is to kind of be a player's coach that way, and we'll see how that plays out. You know, I don't think the players are taking advantage, you know, of the way they practice, although, you know, we'll never get to see an Alabama practice. But my guess is when they come off the field, they're not giggling and backslapping and all that. And if you go to a USC practice, there's a good chance that's what they're going to be doing when practice is over. They'll be running by you and they'll be giggling. They'll be having fun. It's a different way of doing things. How that plays out in the long run, I don't know. But I don't think you need to feel negatively about Clay right now. If you want to go into the whole history of should he or shouldn't he, that's one thing. But if you want to go into, you know, how they're handling this year after the start they got, you got to be a little positive, I think, about that. I don't think there's any question.
We have Ron in Northern Virginia, which is that one of the – is that a battleground state, Dan? I don't know. I'm not sure.
I don't know. It's kind of gone the other way, which is kind of a shame. But maybe they'll come back. We're hoping on Virginia here. But
all right.
I don't know. The governor has pardoned so many people who he thinks are going to vote Democratic. So I don't know how that plays out.
All right. We don't get too political here. I didn't know. I just said to ask it. All right. let's go. So he said, so this is Ron. He's in Northern Virginia. Thanks for keeping us East Coast Trojans in ACC territory informed about what's going on inside and outside of Heritage Hall. Clay Helton and his staff have done an excellent job, the past month. However, we always get this but.
It's always the but, yeah.
ASU, Cal, and Oregon rank 124th, 125th, and 127th out of 128 teams in total defense. The next three games.
Now, let me point this out, though. You can say that, but one of the reasons they're down there is they played USC. You know? I mean, you can that's one of the circular arguments, you know? They're down there, but had they not played USC, they wouldn't be as far down on defense. So USC gets some credit for pushing them down to the bottom of the list. Had they played, you know, Rutgers, they probably wouldn't be down at the bottom of the list. That's all.
So he put that, and then he said, the next three games are against Washington, UCLA, and Notre Dame, who rank 18th, 29th, and 50th in the nation, respectively. Utah, by comparison, is ranked 33rd. The team is playing much better, but
You know what he hasn't said? Colorado is in the top 20 defensively.
They are, too.
Yeah, he left them out, huh? Okay.
He said the team is playing much better, but the next three teams have significantly better defenses than the previous three. With better defenses in front of us, the margin of victories will be much smaller, and turnovers and penalties will play a bigger role in deciding the outcome. Do you feel that UCLA or Notre Dame's defenses can neutralize the offensive advantage of USC and make these rivalry games nail-biters? Fight on from Ron in Northern Virginia.
Well, I mean, I think statistically that's a difficult category. For example, you're going to be way worse statistically if you're a team that tries to run 100 plays on offense the way Cal and Oregon do, and Arizona State and Arizona, you know, all those teams. So that's going to make their defense on the field much more and look terrible numbers wise. If you've got a pretty much terrible offense the way Notre Dame and UCLA have, and you slow the game down, your defense is going to look good statistically, because there aren't very many plays run in a game. So those teams have to slow the game down, you know, because they're not going to do that well. UCLA can't run the ball. Notre Dame, I'm not sure what all is going on with Notre Dame. But I do think they're more physical teams. I think they're a little, you know, more, they're tougher. You know, have more of a tough mindset about them, Notre Dame and UCLA, and Washington certainly does. So I think that's the question in terms of just the toughness and the physicality that they try to play with, you know, before, during, and after the whistle in some of those, you know, situations with some of those teams. USC's got to keep their poise. But, yeah, I think those will be more physical games, whether, you know, they're, you know, their defense has the, you know, the ability to stay with USC if USC comes out and plays well. I don't know whether USC's offensive line has the ability. You know, they block some things really well. There are others when they just hit the line up and knock you off the line of scrimmage, they don't do as well. How that plays out against Notre Dame and UCLA, I don't think we really know yet. But I wouldn't get caught up in the fact that, you know, a couple of teams are way down at the bottom of the list that have already played USC, and a couple of teams that haven't played as many dynamic offenses are ranked higher in terms of overall defense. That may not be, you know, as much of a difference as we think it is, although if you're Notre Dame and UCLA, you know you have to play defense to stay in football games.
Well, I want to give a shout-out to Lamar from the desert. He, I mean, we talked about like what he wrote in about, but he basic thing was talking about what you said at the top, where USC's would be favored against many of the teams ranked ahead of them in the rankings. So I just wanted to, we already kind of discussed that, but I thought that was a point I wanted to bring up from Lamar. And then we have
We like anybody that agrees with us. Good job, Lamar.
Yeah, I do agree with you. He says USC is the second best team in the Pac-12. And we do our podcast of champions power rankings, and I'm probably moving USC up to number two when we do our show this week, even above Utah. We've kept them below Utah, but just the way watching the two teams play, if they played tomorrow, I think USC would be favored. So it's a power ranking. So I think right now I definitely put USC number two behind Washington.
And I give ESPN credit. ESPN's got USC up to number 12 this week in their national power rankings. And I don't disagree. And they've got Colorado number 13. And I think, you know, anybody that saw that game would not have Colorado ranked ahead of USC. But I think that's a good ranking. I think 12 is kind of where this USC team is. I don't think there's any question. If you're ranking them this week, where are they? That's where I'd put them.
Yeah, who would you be favored against and stuff like that? Obviously, you got the three losses, but let's one last one. We have our buddy Nick from Cyprus, big Nick 21 USC on the Peristyle. He says, can you give us any status update on Don Hill, Osa Messina, Jabari Ruffin, and Chuma Adoga? Are they for sure never coming back? Are they going to graduate or transfer from USC? Just curious where they stand. Is there any chance they ever don Cardinal and Gold again? Fight on, love what you guys do. Beat the living bleep out of the UW Dog Pound.
Hey, Chuma played Saturday, so yeah, Chuma's fine. He's gonna be, for all the rumors that people, I don't know if it's the same guy that posts them here and then somebody or posts them somewhere else and then somebody posts it like it's news. But where could he go that would give him? He's probably going to be starting on what could be a really good USC offense next year, or he could go somewhere else and sit out next year. Gee, I don't know. I was thinking about this the other day. Toa's going to be back next year. He's bigger and stronger. I'm looking at Toa maybe as coming back as the other tackle. So if you got Tua and Chuma, and you keep the three, Damian, please, be advised that, you need another year. Vianney and Nico, you get those five guys, you may have your two most dynamic, I know this is, heresy to some extent, but in Deontay Burnett and Michael Pittman, you may have your two most, dynamic receivers back. You've got Kerry Angeline, who is showing up every day on the scout team, 6'7" kid who can really catch the ball, as your third tight end next year. So you've got a trio of, dynamic playmaking tight ends. And then you've got Sam, and you've got, Rojo and Aka Cedric. This team next year has the makings of some kind of an offense. That you would think Chuma would look at that and say, where else would I want to be? As far as the other three guys you mentioned, because of the issues involved, no one's saying anything, nor can anyone say anything. I'd be shocked if any of them, you ever, see them again. Maybe, something happens and out of the blue next year, it's resolved and those, whatever issues that they've got, which USC absolutely cannot comment on, and we, probably don't want to speculate unless it really becomes, public knowledge, that their chances of playing, I would think, would be, very, very long odds against them playing. But, if the whatever, judicial proceedings in USC, outside of USC, if they go in their favor, and, you have to say, well, hey, you're supposed to be, innocent until proven guilty. I don't know what would happen next year, but I just think it's, one of those things that nobody's thinking about, nobody's talking about, and there's almost nothing, you know, knowing about anything, we can't know enough about what happened and what's all involved. And it's almost not worth the time and effort to try to figure it out, because we're really not going to know enough because of the privacy issues and the, you know, and the ways that information is not going to come out. So they're out of sight, out of mind, and I don't know that anybody's even thinking about what their situations are, and that's kind of, you know, that's a tough deal. But again, we don't know enough to comment, and so it really does leave you in a situation where you just kind of don't know what to say, because you don't know.
Yeah, we don't. And my guess, I mean, those guys, you're not Chuma Doga, but the other guys, probably not going to see them again. That's my guess right now. It's with Clay Helton, Dan, it's been very, we don't get anything else besides whatever the university would say. Like, he doesn't add anything. I think in the past you might get a little bit more about this guy or that guy. We're really not getting much, so it's there's not a lot to go on there.
Yeah, he really goes by the university's book. If the university said, this is our call, these are our rules, this is how it goes, this is, you know, how private it stays, that's what Clay's saying. And he's not coming down one way or the other, just saying, this is what they tell me, and I work for them, and they call the shot, and that's it.
All right.
He does it with such good grace and polite, just such a polite way of doing it, that you could ask him four times, and there are other coaches who, you know, would have come down on somebody really hard for asking a question like that, and keep asking it and asking it and asking it. Clay just cannot be more gracious about how he responds, and that he can't respond. But thanks, he'll say, thanks for the question.
Yeah.
But you're not getting an answer.
Yeah. All right. Well, Dan, great stuff. Thanks for joining us again. We'll see you out there on the practice field here in a little bit.
Yes, we will. Okay. Take it easy.
All right. That's
Dan. Good questions again, guys. Thanks a lot. Good questions.
Yeah. Thanks for all the questions. Thank you, Dan Weber, for coming out. You can follow him all over uscfootball.com. Beat writer and columnist. Lots of stories, lots of stuff on the peristyle. So make sure you check it all out for Dan Weber. This is Ryan Abraham, uscfootball.com. Thanks for tuning in, and we will talk to you next time.
You've been listening to the Peristyle Podcast, presented by uscfootball.com. Be sure to tune in next week for the latest news on Trojan football and recruiting. And don't forget, you can automatically download the podcast directly to your smartphone or tablet for free. Just click the iTunes link on peristylepodcast.com or search for Peristyle Podcast at the iTunes Music Store.